for numerous metabolic pathways, not least the transportation and utilization of oxygen. But too much iron can be toxic. In practice, it's hard to overdose on dietary iron as we have inbuilt safety mechanisms that control how much we store. But around 1 in 200 of us has a genetic glitch that can lead to dangerous iron overload, a condition called hemochromatosis, which, if missed, can lead to problems ranging from fatigue to liver failure, and it's often missed. Ted Fitzsimmons is consultant hematologist at Gart Naval Hospital in Glasgow.
Well, hemochromatosis is a condition that results from the excessive absorption of iron from the diet. And we require iron predominantly for the production of blood, for the production of our red cells. But when we absorb too much iron, then iron gets deposited in tissues. It gets deposited in our liver, in our pancreas, in our joints. And iron overload, iron toxicity in these organs can cause serious problems. It can cause liver disease, cirrhosis. Not only can it cause cirrhosis, but the cirrhosis can then go on to cause liver cancer, diabetes, arthritis, a multitude of problems. The vast majority of patients who are genetically predisposed to hemochromatosis are not diagnosed. They don't know about it. And it is, in many ways, described as the most common condition you have never heard of. 1 in 8 of our UK population of North European or Celtic extraction are carriers for this condition. And about 1 in 200 of us are genetically predisposed to develop the full-blown condition.
Carriers with one abnormal gene are normally unaffected, but people with two abnormal copies are at risk. Most people with two faulty genes still don't necessarily become ill, but new research suggests we've underestimated the odds, and that the proportion who do is way higher than previously thought. Professor David Meltzer from University of Exeter led the new research, which analysed data on hundreds of thousands of people in the UK Biobank.
Well, it was thought that less than 1% go on to have problems, but what we've shown is that in men, it's 20 times more likely to get disease as a result of this faulty gene, and in women, 10 times more likely if they've got the double faulty gene. So we found that 1.6% of all the men with hip replacements in our study actually had the double mutation, and 5.8% of all the people with liver cancers. So it is causing a lot of disease.
I mean, 10 to 20 times more likely than we thought. That's quite a change. That's shocking.
Absolutely. And that sounds quite frightening in a way, but also there's a silver lining in that it's very easy to test for and very easy to treat. So it's the rarest of all genetic diseases. It's easy to treat, and it would be wonderful if doctors started testing for it routinely.
But to make the diagnosis, you have to ask for the right test. And a good place to start is a blood sample to check levels of an iron-carrying protein called ferritin. However, to order it, you need to be thinking of hemochromatosis in the first place, and it's easily confused with other conditions. Ted Fitzsimmons.
Hemochromatosis is difficult to diagnose, and that's particularly so because the symptoms develop in such an insidious fashion. Iron accumulation occurs over 10, 15, 20 years. So the symptoms are often subtle and gradual, and the symptoms themselves are common symptoms. Sore joints, fatigue, some degree of weakness, a bit of liver upset. This can occur for a multitude of other reasons apart from hemochromatosis. And there's no one symptom that stands out as, oh, I must check this patient for hemochromatosis. So it is a difficult diagnosis to make. But, you know, for a country that has such a high incidence of people who are genetically predisposed to hemochromatosis, we really need to be world leaders in improving the diagnosis and improving and standardising the treatment for patients once they are diagnosed.
Ted, can I just ask you, I mean, as a GP myself, what does the latest guidance say we should be doing? If we suspect this, what's the simplest way we can look for it to start with?
Well, there's a simple test to measure the level of iron in the blood. And if the level of iron in the blood is raised, then that's a good indication to screen the patient for the gene abnormality of hemochromatosis.
Ted, do we know how long the average person might wait for a diagnosis of hemochromatosis? I mean, what sort of delays are we talking about?
I think the average age for diagnosing hemochromatosis is in the 50s. So the delay could be in the order of 20, 30 years.
Jenny Lees only found out she had hemochromatosis in her early 60s after her son was diagnosed with the condition when he became very ill. She was advised to be tested too. Up until then, she blamed work for her debilitating exhaustion.
I felt extremely tired to the point where I sometimes used to say, I feel ill, I feel so tired. But I put it down to I worked in Bristol, I travelled by train every day, I had 9 staff. So put it down to just generally doing too much work, really.
And what had happened to your son?
My son became diabetic and within a few months had become insulin dependent. And that's when they found the hemochromatosis.
And presumably neither you nor him had ever heard of this condition before?
No, not at all.
And how old was your son at this time?
When he first started with the problem, he was 38. He died at 42. His liver was hugely compromised. And he then picked up one of the hepatitis and they were unable to give him the drugs that he needed because his liver was then so very badly cirrhosed.
Jenny's son's story is extreme. Deaths in middle age are unusual, but it highlights just how serious hemochromatosis can be if it's missed. And the story is all the more tragic as the condition is very treatable.
When patients present, we start by taking a pint of blood off them every week. And we continue doing that until the iron levels are satisfactory or normal. And then the patient goes into a maintenance phase where we venesect them. We take a pint of blood off less frequently, but often enough, perhaps every 3 months, to keep the iron levels under control.
And by reducing their iron, can we reverse much of the damage that's been done?
Oh, we can reverse virtually all of the damage that's done. We cannot reverse cirrhosis. If cirrhosis of the liver is established, then that doesn't reverse, but we can reverse a lot of liver damage with simply venesection. Unfortunately, the arthritis that our patients get, and it's interesting from the Professor Meltzer study that incidence of arthritis and bone problems is really high, really much higher than we'd thought in our hemochromatosis population. Unfortunately, the arthritis, once it has developed, does not improve with venesection. So we certainly want to diagnose it before arthritis is established.
Ted, if there's one thing that you'd like to change so that we improve the care of people with hemochromatosis, what would that be?
Well, I would quite like UK laboratories that find patients with high serum ferritins. And if that patient is of North European extraction, that sample would automatically be tested for the iron level in the blood. And if the ferritin is high and the iron is high, then the patient should be screened for hemochromatosis.
Ted Fitzsimmons. And just to be clear, your GP can check your ferritin levels as an indicator of trouble, but a high reading isn't just caused by iron overload. To confirm exactly what's going on, more tests, iron levels and genetic analysis will be required. Details on the website, where you can also subscribe to our weekly podcast and find out how to get in touch. Karen from Rochdale emailed